Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 91 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Leonard, joined, as always, by Todd. It will be with Todd forever and ever.
Oh, I am eternal. 91, that was the year I graduated, so it's like a nice milestone moment for me, too.
You're older than I am.
Yes, by far, I think.
What,
24? 24 now?
Yes, 24. Yes.
Gotcha.
Nah, you got me by 4 years. I was going to tweet the other day, and sometimes like the things I tweet are jokes, and sometimes I'm like, ah, it's not funny enough of a joke. Mm-hmm. And I was going to try to get a, like, I couldn't think of the proper hashtag of, like, I'm old, or you know when you're old, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to start with, I remember when Aquafresh only had 2 stripes.
Wow.
Not this fancy 3-stripe nonsense.
Yeah, that is old.
That's right. So we have a busy show today.
Chock full of stuff.
Chock full of stuff. We have tons of news. There was a heartbreaker that came out last week that we are going to delve into. It's going to be the chunk of the episode in regards to a much heralded project that we were all looking forward to and kind of how things fell apart from there. And I think you were the one who maybe, at least in my world, broke the story.
I am a reporter. Yeah, usually I like to save it for the show, but this one was just was too close, and I was like, I have to say something now. I'm like, mm-hmm. whatever Leonard says, I'm gonna put it out there.
So the Doctor Who license has been snatched up by someone else. We're going to talk about Forever Evil, the upcoming DC thing, and a little bit about Infinity as well, I think, because that comes out this week. Some stuff about the Marvel digital redeem codes that I found very interesting. We're going to talk about some digital sales and freebies going on. We're going to talk about a ton of books that we read from last week. And I did tease on Twitter that there are 2 books that are coming off my pull list. One will probably not be a surprise, the other one possibly, to you, our listening audience.
Mm-hmm.
We're also going to talk about the book that we are most looking forward to coming out this week, our Twitter question from this past week, which maybe I wasn't clear when I said it on the show last week. A couple people put down cartoon, but no live-action TV adaptation. And I'll be honest with you, it was a tie, and it was a surprise.
Ooh, really?
Yes, it was a tie and a surprise. And also, we have an interview with comic book writer Mike Kingston, whose new project, Headlocked, is on Kickstarter. We're going to talk to him about his involvement in the world of comic books, how he became a fan, involvement in wrestling, dealing with the Kickstarter project, and just kind of starting from the ground up.
Yep.
So let's get into the news, and this is something that, as mentioned, you know, our listenership probably is well aware of how close this is to Todd and I, mostly Todd, and that is Kevin Maguire. Specifically, Kevin Maguire was announced to be on Justice League 3000 with Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis, I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Again, why start pronouncing things correctly now?
We're 91 in, why do it, right?
So, you know, they were getting the band back together. You know, the crew on one of the best runs on a comic book in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, what day was it? Thursday, maybe?
I think so. I think it was Thursday.
Yeah, where Kevin just tweeted simply, "I think I was fired."
And I was just happened to be looking at Twitter at that time, and I was like, there's only one book that he's doing. And then, like, you know, it all started, I retweeted that, and I'm like, and it wouldn't make me doubt the way DC's been running. And, you know, he ended up saying, then he was like, does anybody need any books to be drawn?
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, it came out more and more, like, it was more than that. But I was like, at no point was there a second of doubt in my mind that he was off Justice League 3000 when he said that.
Yeah. So it came out that he most certainly was. They changed the direction. Apparently he had 1 issue already done and ready to go for the October shipping. It was supposed to come out this October, the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
And they came out and they said that Howard Porter, who had done the designs, is going to take over. Keith had given an interview saying that he was happy, you know, to work with the person who worked with Grant Morrison on his legendary run of Justice League back in the 90s, kind of, you know, given the public line, which is very un-Keith, if you ask me.
That was the same thing that I thought, because we've heard some things out of him at times that just make me like, wow. And I've heard him like chime up over other stuff too, like publicly. And so I was kind of a little shocked about that, but I guess maybe they, you know, slapped some down some non-disclosure things and things have changed a little bit, but who knows with that.
Right. So, you know, Kevin then took to say that he had given up working with Bendis on one of the upcoming X-Men books to work on this book, and now he's out two gigs, essentially. Him and Bendis had a back and forth on Twitter, which is the way things are done these days, and he is now going to be drawing Guardians of the Galaxy number 10, which is quite some time away, because that's a much much delayed book in and of itself. But the thing I want to mention is what Bendis put up on his Tumblr. He said, and I'm going to just skim this real quick to make sure he does not swear. He doesn't. Sometimes he does. As I have made it very clear on this Tumblr, I think artists like Kevin are a national treasure and should be treated as such by publishers and readers alike. As Matt Fraction said at dinner last night, he is probably one of the most influential comic artists of this generation and does not get enough credit for it. You can see his influence in a lot of places. We have been talking about working together on and off for a while, but the stars never aligned. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but I would like to thank whoever it was that made this possible. Kevin will be joining me on Guardians of the Galaxy 10, which I hope will be the first of many projects together. So, yes, it's really good on... I think this is one of the positives in today's internet culture and the way things happen so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very good that they were able to get together. I feel bad, however, that the Justice League 3000 project has been changed. It's still on my maybe pile. It has been delayed to December. So we will see what happens with it from here.
Right now, I have a bad taste in my mouth about it, but saying that, I'm probably going to end up getting it. You know me. It's a Keith and Jam book, so I'll still get it. But the thing that I do get is Kevin being... I could see Kevin upset that, you know, to go from a Justice League book, which, now granted, you know, it's not Justice League with Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, but this would have been more of a high-profile, you know, book because of the team that was on it, and you know, he did it because with his friends, but he turned down Bendis work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that to me is the thing, is like, all right, I'll do this, I'm loyal to DC, but I passed up an opportunity to be on a book with the best-selling writer in comics right now. I you know, I still stand by that, you know, an X title, something that will be reprinted immediately and will probably be constantly in reprints, trade and stuff like that.
And be a top 10 seller.
Exactly. While Bendis is at the company, you know it's going to be out there and it's going to sell. And instead they go, you know what? No, we're sorry. We're going in a different direction. Grim and gritty or darker. And I'm like, well, why did you even put Kevin on the book? I won't even get into that because that's just, you know, crazy. But then on top of that, they're like, oh, we're going to give you a 10-page, you know, digital first book and then a 4-page backup. Like, that to me is a slap in the face. And I mean, I know I'm a Kevin, you know, apologist and supporter and stuff like that, but just to give up that kind of work and then, oh, we'll give you this to tide you over. You know,
well, I think it was because he wanted to work with the old team.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly seemed that way, that he was looking, he was very excited about working with the old team again.
Mm-hmm.
And he even said that, you know, since we don't have a project to, you know, do together, I won't be going to Baltimore, which I know probably made you very sad.
I'm the saddest, you know, that I can be right now. That was one of the big reasons that I was going to Baltimore, obviously just to get away. But, you know, I go see him, maybe pick up a sketch or two. But just like I said, when he said, I personally
pick up a sketch or two.
Yeah, I mean that I'm owed, and then maybe buy a few more. But but it's just like, you know what? I'd be like, go anyway and support Guardians of the Galaxy 10 and do whatever and get out there. And by the way, did you happen to see his Rocket Raccoon sketch?
I did. Yes,
it looks pretty good. He draws everything well, so I'm looking forward to it. I think he'd be a great fit, and I hope it gets more work at Marvel because of it. And there's a book I want to see him on, and it would make me pick it up, and you'd be happy finally that I'm buying it. I think the perfect fit for Kevin would be Wolverine and the X-Men.
I think that would be great. I think, you know, as Bendis mentioned, how there's a lot of artists out there whose style is, you know, very much similar and inspired by Kevin. And I think a lot of the artists that have been on that book in the past. Mm-hmm. And also, I know Ed McGuinness is supposed to be on the Amazing X-Men book that's coming this November. I don't know how long he's going to be on that book. You know, he was on, you know, you think of a guy like Ed McGuinness and, you know, the way his art style is, you don't think that he could handle a monthly book. But if you remember, he was on that Jeff Loeb Hulk book for like 3 years mm-hmm. without a gap.
Yep.
So I can definitely see, you know, maybe I think the team of McGuinness and McGuire working on that book, like kind of in alternating things, would be unbelievable.
Yeah, and I would definitely be all over that. I read that one issue where they were trying to get the more professors or teachers for the school. And yes. I just, all I could think to myself was, Kevin should be drawing this right now. And I would be very, very happy. The only thing that I think back and I'm upset now is that he drew that whole issue of Justice League 3000, and because he doesn't draw anything but covers on paper anymore, it's all digital. I would have swooped in and picked up all those pages on the cheap. I would have been like, I'll take them all.
Yeah.
Just be like, unpublished, I'll take them. But you know, now he can just erase them. That which breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So, yeah, so that's a huge deal, I think. And, again, it's good to see the way that the industry moves. This is one of the, you know, something good coming from something bad.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm glad that he landed on his feet. And
yes.
And hope that things work out over there and maybe they'll treat him better.
Well, we shall see. You know, we'll see if that 10-pager comes to pass. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be very interesting. So kind of in a, you know, we'll save that news story for later. Titan Comics. Titan Comics looks to be the ones to be getting the Doctor Who license come 2014.
Yes, it looks like they'll be doing, like, the remainder of the Matt Smith, like, license, and then the new Doctor.
Yes.
I'm not really familiar with a lot of Titans stuff, but I'll probably be buying some of their products in the near future.
Well, again, you know, I'm going to start watching Doctor Who in November. I was very pleased to see so many of our listeners responded that they were shocked to hear me say such a thing. I'll try to put that in the notes, maybe like ring a bell or something next time I'm going to say something crazy.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to give me a smelling salt warning that you're going to say something that unexpected so I can keep it right here in case I pass out during it. But, yeah, a lot of people were joking. But it's cool. I mean, I'm glad that, you know, Doctor Who will have representation in comics over here. You know, they have a different company who does them over in the UK. And I've enjoyed them, and I think they've gotten remarkably better. I used to buy them in the beginning, even though they weren't very well written, but they've had a lot of decent writers now that that are known. You know, before I couldn't have, you know, picked the writers out of lineup, but between, you know, Andy Diggle and Filakoff and a couple other people, you know, Wade was up for a few issues. Hopefully he'll go over to, you know, do an issue or two at Titan, but I hope to see good work coming out of them.
You know, and who knows, maybe I'll the TV show will make me such a fan that I'll be on board for all the comics as well.
Yes, probably. I'm going to go with yes.
So one other thing that I want to mention is I think we talked about it before a couple weeks ago. Marvel's Infinity coming out. Mm-hmm. Comes out this week. It is Todd's responsibility to come back next week with a review of it.
Okay.
We talked about it there, but coming just in a scant 3 weeks later is DC's big event, the Forever Evil thing. Now, I'm not going to spoil either one of those things. That's not my job. That's DC's job. And if you read the DC solicitations for November that had come out earlier this week, then you know if you saw the press release from IGN from DC last week, then you know, but we're not going to talk about it here, but I will say this. It made me more intrigued to pick that book up.
Yeah. I actually thought it was kind of cool. I'm a, you know, that what's going on with that. I was a fan of that. So I like it. I just wish I almost didn't know about it, 'cause I was going to pick up some of that stuff and pick up try the Forever Evil book, but it is an interesting slant on it though.
Yes, and the fact that September is going to be such a light month for me because of the craziness with Villains Unite, or the Villains books and the 3D covers. I guess there's a thing where, you know, if you know you're a retailer, you can go right to Diamond and they'll tell you the exact breakdown of how many of the books that you're actually getting.
Yes, ours is actually getting most of his stuff.
That's awesome.
I was talking to him. He actually said there's no, I think he's like, if he ordered maybe 25 or something, he's getting the least he's getting is like 23. You know, it's really skewed that he has almost 100% of what he ordered. Now, he was also telling me that, you know, because of the demand now, if there were still the final order cutoffs, he would have bumped them up. So he has to get the rest with, which we've been calling 2D covers, which I want to call regular covers now. But so that's the only difference. Is he can't bump up the orders.
I think from here on out, we should just call all standard covers 2D covers.
Because of the change in technology now?
Right.
We've advanced beyond 2D covers, so when we talk about them, that's what we should call them. I'm with you.
Well, this just means 2014's event is going to have to be 4D covers.
Ooh, maybe Titan could do that with the Doctor Who stuff, comics through time. But yeah, a 4D comic would be awesome. I read it yesterday.
Just reading that little piece on Forever Evil, you know, makes me definitely interested to check it out. If I didn't have as light as a September as I do, I probably would think twice about it, but I'm definitely going to check it out in just that book. I'm not going to pick up Justice League. I'm not going to pick up anything else. I'm going to see if it stands alone as it is, especially the more and more that I read the early reviews of Infinity and stuff that say if you're not reading the other Hickman books, then, you know, this one might be a tough road for you. I think I saw one review that said this is essentially a third Avengers book. That if you're not reading the other two, then there's a very good chance that you may be scratching your head a bit.
Maybe I'll only be half lost because I'm just reading the new Avengers, not the regular Avengers. So I'll let you know.
Yeah, so that's it's not your pick for next week, but I'm forcing you to talk about it, even if you just say, I liked it, I didn't like it.
Gotcha, I will.
So one last bit of news that I do want to mention before we get into the interview with Mike Kingston. Rumors had come out that Marvel has ended the kickbacks to retailers for redeeming the digital codes. Last year in New York, they hyped this whole big thing saying that they had given, you know, over $200,000 back to retailers. I guess a percentage of every time you redeemed one of the codes that are in the $3.99 books when you put in the store, you know, it kicks back to that store. Now, when I did my books this past week, it gave me the option to go back to the store. So that's why I'm thinking it might just be a rumor. I don't know for sure. And I also saw that apparently, like, if you're a store, you can opt out of it. You can choose not to have the money come back.
I guess. The money.
Yeah, so I hope if that was a plan, you know, if you know, obviously it was something that they were doing. They hyped it up real big at New York last year. I hope it's something that they're still doing, or I hope that it's something that's being delayed and reworked to kind of benefit the retailers, you know, more than not.
Because I always applauded it. I mean, they don't have to, you know, give the digital money to them or whatever. But I just thought it was really cool, and I'd like to see it continue because, you know, that gives incentive to you know, push. Say, hey, here's a, you know, a comic, and you get a digital code, and, you know, go use it and promote the books. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, though, in this day if they did terminate the whole thing. But hopefully they won't.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see if we get an official word from a retailer or official, you know, a retailer who was getting that check, whether it be every month or every quarter or whatever it was, or even just if it was a credit on their Diamond account, yeah. However they were getting it, that a retailer comes forward and says, yep, I'm not getting it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, because I have no clue how they would be getting it, but that's an interesting, you know, question.
I'll maybe bother Dave at the shop today.
Oh, yeah, we could do that.
So that covers the news. Let's get into the digital stuff. Marvel has a variety of freebies available. They have the first issue of the current ongoing Venom book when it was written by Rick Remender with art by Tony Moore, and that's just a really nice-looking book. They have the very first issue of Uncanny X-Men way back from the 60s, and a random issue of Iron Man. It's the original run of Iron Man. It's issue 55, and I really can't see any significance to it.
To what?
Like when they bundle these books together, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's usually like five or six issues as part of their comic spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one of them is free. It's like the first five issues of Venom are in the spotlight, so the first issue is free. The first six issues of Uncanny X-Men are, you know, spotlight. The first issue is free. So the books that are involved with this Iron Man 55 being free is Avengers 125, Avengers Annual number 7, Marvel 2-in-1-2, and then three issues of Warlock.
I could tell you what they all have in common.
Now that I look at all their covers, I do.
Those are all key Thanos issues.
Okay, I wasn't sure if they were all like related Thanos issues, or are they just like key Thanos issues?
They're key, because I don't have the list in front of me. The 2-in-1 and the Avengers Annual are the ending of the Thanos versus Warlock story, which are probably in those three Warlock issues. Like, because they ran through Warlock, and then Warlock got canceled, and they're like, hey, Jim, do you want to tell the ending of the story? We'll give you a Marvel 2-in-1 and an Avengers annual, or like either way, I flip-flopped them. I don't know which one came first. And then Iron Man 55 was the first appearance of Thanos. And what was the other book that was in there? Avengers 125?
Yes.
That one I'm not 100% sure on, but it might be a Thanos appearance.
So here, as I look further, okay,
mm-hmm.
It's part of an Avengers versus Thanos trade.
Okay.
That also includes Captain Marvel 25 to 30, Marvel feature number 12,
mm-hmm.
Daredevil 105 to 107, more issues of Captain Marvel, up 31, 32, 33, Warlock 15, and material from Logan's Run 6.
Yep, Logan's Run 6 had an 8-page or 4-page Thanos backup story.
What a mess.
Yeah, Thanos was one of the key villains behind that that book that you were talking about that sounds like Daredevil but can't possibly be Daredevil.
Right.
But I think that was a storyline, and he only ended up being like in a panel at the end. Like, he was in a bunch of books that are worth, like, back when I was getting them all, were worth a lot of money when Infinity Gauntlet came out, because that was the first jump in Thanos prices. But he was around a lot, because Jim Starlin would jump around and do different books, and they would also use him. They were setting him up for a big storyline. So that's why it's so chaotic.
Right. So there you go. If you're a Thanos guy, check out that first issue of Iron Man, and maybe you'll buy them all.
Yes.
And also, sorry, we went off on a tangent there. I knew Todd would be able to help figure out that riddle. He's been figuring out riddles all day today.
I am. I'm on top of stuff. And I'm on top of the big stuff. I've let a few slide through the grate before I could grab them.
You're the reverse Riddler.
Yes, I am.
So the other thing is Mind the Gap from Image is on sale. That's written by Jim McCann, who used to be a big deal at Marvel. He did some Hawkeye stuff. He was a big deal editor there, and this is his creator-owned book for Image. Check that out. I know the first issue is free. It's one of those Image evergreens that are always free. And I think that covers everything doing digitally.
I think it does, too. Now would be a good time to mention our sponsor, you think?
I certainly think so.
Our sponsor is Transporter. That's a backup storage device. It is a private cloud device that you own and control. It has all the benefits of the cloud without any privacy concerns or reoccurring monthly fees. It is simple to use as Dropbox, and in addition to Windows and Mac, there are mobile versions for iOS and Android, and they have a choice of different sizes of memories all the way up to 2 terabytes, which I think is 400,000 songs.
That's a lot of music.
That is a lot of music. That's more than I have.
So thanks to one of our listeners, Brad, whose Twitter handle is almost incomprehensible. I think I've mentioned it before on the show.
But I think I understand his Twitter handle now.
Yes, it's BD, 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 BD. Those are the letters in that order.
I think he's a Buck Rogers fan, that's why, but go ahead.
Okay. So when you go to the link, filetransporter.com/longbox, you need to click on the little green button at the top that says buy, and then you need to click on the link kind of in the middle of the page there that says connected data. It looks very similar to the icon for connected data in the upper left-hand side. That's how you get to File Transporter's store, and that's how you can use our redeem code, Longbox, for 10% off your order.
Glad we got it figured out.
Boom. So there you go. Fixing problems, taking care of business, and I think right now is going to be a perfect time to go to our interview with Headlock creator Mike Kingston.
Leonard and Todd here with writer extraordinaire Michael Kingston, writer of Headlocked, a great comic book that takes place in the world of professional wrestling, and he's been writing that book since 2007 in various incarnations, and he has a Kickstarter project to get the next level of that book off the ground. Mike, how you doing?
Good. Very good. Thanks for having me.
Yes, this is a big deal, actually, to have you on the show. This is the first time in some 91 episodes that we've ever had a guest on.
Yep. Wow. Trying something, new here.
Not very high.
No, believe me. This is something that I feel, and Todd deep down feels very strongly about, both wrestling and comic books. As I mentioned, you've been working on this book since 2007. You'd published it through Visionary, and now with the Kickstarter, you're looking to go self-published.
Actually, the first books were published by Marcosia.
Oh, okay. My apologies.
But Visionary is a studio that I'd been affiliated with. But yeah, we're just looking to sort of build the brand, I guess. You know, it's been a frustrating time sort of dealing with comic book companies and. I think any form of entertainment, people don't want to try new things. And I think with the litany of horrible wrestling comics that have come out in the past, I can understand why publishers tend to have a sort of a negative attitude towards the term wrestling comic. But, I figured we'd take it to the people. So.
And you set a realistic goal on your Kickstarter, and that's always something that I want to mention. But we'll get into the nuts and the bolts of the Kickstarter a little bit later on. You have quite the eclectic group of people working on the book. Your current writer, or your current artist, my apologies, Michael Mullapola, is a wrestler himself.
Yeah, he's been wrestling for 8 years in New Zealand. He runs a comic book store, and he's an artist. So, he was sort of the piece to the puzzle, like when we met. Where I kind of knew, like, okay, we're ready to take a big swing at this thing.
And that's now when you hooked up with him, him being a wrestler and him being the entrepreneur that he is, have you ever dabbled in the ring?
You know, when I decided I was going to write it, I spent a couple of days working out with some guys just to kind of get a feel for it, and it wasn't super fun. I mean, I played football for, close to 15 years, and I never got hurt or anything. I mean, I'm not, prissy or anything, but yeah, it definitely would have taken some getting used to.
So he's, the main artist on the upcoming book. You've worked in the past and currently still with Jerry Lawler. A lot of our listeners, even if not wrestling fans all the time, I'm sure a lot of them are familiar with the name Jerry the King Lawler. He's been on national TV for the better part of, 20 years now?
Yeah, at least.
So how did you get hooked up with him?
It's the craziest thing, really. I emailed him through his website, and it was such a long shot. Like, I forgot I did it after I did it. Like, I was just one Saturday afternoon, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do this. And then I sent an email, and then I forgot about it, on to the next. And like a week later, I got an email back, and I'm thinking it's, something like his webmaster or something, but it was from him. And he said, send me some books and I'll take a look at them. And I sent him some books, and maybe a week after that, he called me and said he'd do it. And, we've done conventions together and whatnot. And it's really kind of the most, surreal thing for me to be able to call him a friend now, and, we do shows, and we've, been places together. It's just the weirdest thing.
So some of the other folks that are going to be working on the upcoming book with you, you have people contributing writings, people contributing art. I always knew the Hurricane, Christopher Daniels, people like that were comic book fans, just from the way they've carried themselves on TV, interviews that they've given. But some of the other folks that you got involved with this, specifically Rob Van Dam and Ken Anderson. I was not aware that they were comic book people. How did you get hooked up with all these other people? Beth Phoenix, who's been in the WWE. Sin Bodhi, who was in WWE, TNA. He's been all over. He's one of the nicest guys in the world, by the way, as well. Side note, Sin Bodhi, awesome guy.
Yeah, he really is. He actually had a self-published comic book in the 90s, in the late 90s, called Friend of the Possessed Flower. But I just over the years, you know, since Jerry was the first person I hooked up with, he did the covers, you know, the covers for my single issue and my trade. And then just I've been selling the books at shows, and I've come into contact with most of these people. Just, you know, they've been at shows as fans, just walking around. They happen across my table, and, you know, they ended up liking what I was doing. And, you know, over the years, they're like, oh, if there's anything I can do to help you, you know, let me know. And when I started to formulate the Kickstarter idea, you know, the whole idea has always been about, you know, people who are passionate about wrestling and comics and whatnot, and all the people that are involved in the book are passionate about wrestling and comics and art, and that it just all sort of happened organically. They're just people that have sort of wandered into my path and happened to want to help out, and I've just been very fortunate, I guess, that, I mean, people, everybody's been so supportive and fantastic.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And those, as you mentioned, passionate about comic books, passionate about wrestling. You know, you've mentioned before we started recording here that you've done so many interviews. It's all about the wrestling side. This is a comic book podcast. Let's talk about your history with comic books. How did it start for you? How did you become a fan? And then how did you make that leap to becoming, you know, a comic book professional writing comic books?
I think the first book I ever had was it was an Amazing Spider-Man, and I got off a spinner rack in Kenny Drugs, and it had Spider-Man and Captain America fighting on the cover. And even as a kid, I knew, you know, they were both superheroes. I mean, I watched cartoons and stuff, and I was like, man, why are these two fighting? And I remember begging my mom to buy it for me, and I still have it. It's pretty beat up, but I still have it, and you know, I would grab comics at the drugstore and stuff, but then I think it was around the first Secret Wars, I started reading those, and then I got really into the X-Men. I read X-Men pretty much religiously right through till I got out of college, and then one day I read, somebody had recommended Concrete Think Like a Mountain to me, and that totally blew my mind. Like, it totally changed my perception of what comics was and what comics could be. And that was the book that made me want to be a comic book writer. And I thought, you know, you could do something that was entertaining, but kind of educational. And, you know, and then I thought, you know, why wouldn't I want to do something like that about wrestling? You know, I mean, there had been so many bad wrestling comics over the years, and I was always frustrated. You know, I would get excited when wrestling comics would come out, and they would always kind of let me down. So I thought, you know, I'm going to write a wrestling comic that, as a wrestling fan, I would want to read. And, you know, not somebody fighting demons or, you know, Steve Austin taking on angry ranchers or Kevin Nash as Mad Max or whatever. And, you know, I just wanted to, you know, to make a comic about wrestling for wrestling fans. And that's what it is.
So that, you know, this Concrete story that you read, that inspired you to become a comic book writer. That was, you know, kind of what opened your eyes to what comics could be.
Yeah, it totally blew my mind. Like, it was such an amazing, amazing story. And, you know, I had just come out of college and just, I don't know, you know, I was kind of into activism and politics and stuff. And it just touched on so many different things. And it was just, it was amazing. Like, it's funny now, even after all these years, like, I do so many conventions, and I've kind of met everybody in comics. I don't get really excited when I meet people, but I always geek out when I see Paul Chadwick, which doesn't happen very often, but when I do, I'm always turned into a goofy little fanboy, and I think he's probably irritated when I come by.
Todd, I know you've gotten a sketch from Paul Chadwick, and you've had a couple interactions with him yourself, yes?
Yes, I met him on the West Coast when I was out in San Diego, and his sketch list was filled up. So I went up to him. I was like, oh, can I get a little doodle or anything? And he's like, oh, I'll do you something nice. And he did like an early stages of a sketch. And then I saw him again in New York. And he remembered me. And he was like, oh, I remember you from San Diego and everything. And we were talking. And he's like, you know what? I showed him it. And he's like, you know what? I can ink that really quick for you. And, you know, and we sat and we talked for a while. And then he was like, oh, if you ever make it to Europe, I'll color it for free. I still haven't been able to get there to a show in Europe with him. But I'm a big Concrete fan. I love everything. Him climbing Mount Everest is one of my favorite stories of all time.
Yeah, there's nothing bad about Concrete. There's no bad Concrete stories. But that was it, and that was the linchpin for me in my head. And then it just, you know, then from there I discovered like Vertigo and independent books, and it just, I had sort of a similar journey, I think, with wrestling, you know, but whereas I had watched WWE and WCW forever, and then somewhere in the early 2000s I discovered the indies, and again, you know, blew my mind and changed my perceptions.
So you mentioned about the wrestling and the parallels, you know, that we mentioned before. It sounds like you might have fallen out a little bit with wrestling and the independence had brought you back. Was there ever a time where you had fallen out with comics? Was Concrete the thing that brought you back in, or were you just trying different things and you've just been a comic reader, you know, since those days where Secret Wars, you know, the train from Secret Wars to X-Men to Concrete, have you just been on that the whole time with really no breaks? You know, sometimes in the 90s might have been a little rough for a lot of people.
I had a little break when I was in college just because it was so hard to get books, you know, but I'd never gotten out of it completely. You know, I had my local comic store, to this day actually still sends me books. I don't live in the town I was born in. He sends me an email every week, and I tell him what I want, and then he mails it to me, loyalty and all. But he used to, I mean, I had, you know, it was a little easier back then because I just collected X-Men books. So, you know, every couple of months he would send me a box with whatever X-Men books had come out. And that's how I stayed into it. But it was a little hard in college. But after I got out of college, I was right back into it again.
So you mentioned, you know, you get out of college, you read Concrete, this inspires you. Now, did you go to school for writing? You know, what did you do? Like, what were the steps that you took, maybe to some aspiring writers out there listening to the show? You know, when you made that decision, like, I'm going to write comics, what did you do? What were those steps that you took? Obviously, everybody's journey is different. Let's hear your journey, how you got there.
Actually, mine's like the worst, but I have a biochemistry degree. And I've never worked a day in my life in the sciences, but, you know, I've mostly worked in blue collar management, but I just taught myself. You know, I bought a couple books, and I've always had kind of an analytical mind where I sort of break things down, and processes and stuff are kind of my thing. So, you know, I found the stories that appealed to me, and I just studied them and just broke them down in a way that made sense to me, and tried to think about, you know, and then tried to, you know, use the framework to build my stories, you know, try to find like the sort of overarching framework to the stories that I liked, and then, you know, apply that to what I want to do. So it's a little weird.
So that was your thought process to get there. Obviously, you just didn't one day decide, you know, just like put pen to paper and start submitting things. Did you go through a process of going to conventions, rejections after rejections? Like, what was that first big break, I guess, that big first opportunity that you got?
It was funny because I was completely oblivious to the sort of comics business. And I just remember, you know, I had, you know, worked up a pitch for it, and I had a whole marketing plan. And, you know, I went to a comic book show and I just started talking to people. And they're like, well, where's your art? And I'm like, no, I'm a writer. Why would I have art? And they're like, well, get some art. And I'm like, why would I get art? You're the publisher. Wouldn't you have artists? Wouldn't it be easier for you as a publisher to find artists than, you know, me, some weirdo in upstate New York? And they're like, well, that's how this works. I'm like, oh, all right. They're like, nobody wants to read a script. So, and I found an artist. And then I went back and they're like, yeah, we don't like this art. Get better art. And So then I eventually hooked up with Randy Valiente through digital webbing, and you know, people liked his art better. And then we got accepted through Marcosia, and we put out our first we put out a one shot called Headlock Work of Art, and then we put out a mini series after that called Headlock the Tryout. And it was a frustrating process, just as an independent trying to get retail space, any kind of distribution traction. Like, I spent a whole week. I took a week off from my job, and I drove to every comic book store in 3 states. And, like, I mean, I spent one day in Manhattan, and I started on the tip of Manhattan. I walked my way, like, 100-some-odd blocks to every comic book store I could find, Connecticut, New York, Massachusetts. I mean, I drove all over the place. And I handed, you know, I had a preview book, and I talked to people, and I said, hey, if you have wrestling fans, they're going to like this book. And I mean, I had guys flat out tell me that they don't carry indies no matter what. Every store told me that they had multiple customers that they knew of that were wrestling fans. But, you know, most of them, you know, some of them were nice, and some of them, I mean, some of them were just really just like, yeah, there's no way that we would carry this book, which I think is amazing. But, and then obviously the numbers kind of bore that out. I mean, we sold out pretty much everywhere we were carried, you know, and I had all these people sending me emails, you know, back through this MySpace was the thing. People were sending me emails from MySpace. I'm trying to get this book. I can't get the book. You know, my retailer's telling me they can't get it, which is a crock. And that was just frustrating. And people don't want to pay, you know, $3 to $5 to ship a $3 comic book. So, it, you know, if it had been there, I think our numbers would have been better. But, like, that was the difficult part. So I knew I had to do something different. I mean, I couldn't keep doing it the same way. So I knew something was going to have to be different from the, you know, when I got ready to, you know, sort of make my next attack.
So you finally got the book, you got notice, you got all these different contacts in the world of wrestling. Obviously, you know, you're doing it yourself on the comic side. You know, you're not going through a publisher. You're doing it yourself. And the Kickstarter so far, with a month left to go, is almost at its goal. And again, it's a very reasonable goal. And the one thing that I want to point out to you that I love, love, love about your Kickstarter, and this is going to be the thing that probably surprises you, that probably no one's ever told you that they love the most. In the part where it says, what are you paying for? You have it broken down saying, this is what goes to the Amazon fees. This is what's for the rewards and everything else like that. And then the rest is for 3 full-time artists to produce this book. Everything extra is going into making the book better. No holofoil covers, no poly bags, no stickers, no gatefold covers, no glow-in-the-dark inks, nothing, just more story. And that's the part that I love the most about what you have set up with your Kickstarter project. Sure, you have a little bit more than those sort of things. You know, you have some stuff to entice people to contribute outside of the book, but the fact that you actually have it broken down, and I'm, you know, I don't know how much you've seen what has gone on with some other Kickstarter projects. You've seen people not budget enough for shipping, not budget enough for this, and then having to do different projects to fund the shipping on stuff.
Yeah, I heard all.
You're very reasonable and you're very realistic with your project.
Well, I mean, I do this because I love it. I mean, I'm not going to make a dime out of this. I mean, the money's going to my penciler, my colorist, and my inker. Or not my penciler, my colorist, and my letterer. I'm not getting a penny, and I really don't care. Like, I'm not – I think if you get into comics to make money, you're probably not a very good businessman. You know, they cost a lot to make, and they're not you know, and they sell at a low price point, which isn't – I think any MBA would tell you isn't a great recipe for success. I just want to tell this story as long as I can tell it. You know, I do it because I love it. I've had amazing experiences doing it. I think people people that read it and give it a chance, they like it. But we're just paying for the art and the shipping and the printing and Amazon. And if I get more money, we're gonna go. You know, we're gonna put that into the books. I'm not gonna I'm not going to buy spinning rims. but I think, you know, what we want to do, the money that we're trying to raise is just to fund the book. But honestly, I would really like to raise more because I would like to prove to – I feel like that number is the one proof that we have to retailers, distributors, publishers, whatever, that there is a market for a well-written wrestling book. Because, I mean, I sell a lot of books at shows and people buy books and they email me the next day and like, I love this and I can't wait till the next one comes out. But I mean, you tell publishers this and they're like, yeah, you know, you can't really prove that because it's a cash, you know, it's cash business. So mm-hmm. this Kickstarter is the one thing that I have that I can prove these guys wrong with. So, I mean, I would really like to, I mean, honestly, I would like to blow that goal out of the water, and I don't even care about the money. I mean, it's just, I want as many, you know, I want a ton of people to back it at $25 just to get a copy of the book. Like that's, you know, not just for the readers. I mean, that's really what we want. Cause I want to, you know, I go to New York Comic Con in October and I would like to bring a couple plates of crow for some folks.
Now, without naming any names, of course, we try to keep sure. things positive on the show. You say serve a plate of crow. Is there any one or ones in particular that when you said that you had in mind that you're like, boy, I'd love to stick it to this editor or show this one guy that really, you know, when I was going out there and who was a real jerk to me when I was going around trying to shop my book around, that story of you saying that you went around with your samples and they're like, well, you need an artist. You get an artist. They're like, better artist, you know, making you jump through all these crazy hoops, you know?
That part of it, like that part I get is just comics, but about, I think last February, I was at a convention and, you know, I asked the guy if I could pitch him my book and I literally got through four words. The fourth word was wrestling. And he said, yeah, not interested. And
oh boy.
That, you know, and whatever, I guess on some level, I guess I appreciate him being straight with me. You know, I mean, I wouldn't want to make my whole pitch while he's, you know, thinking about Matlock or something, but I don't, you know, I really would like to, you know, serve that dude a plate of crow.
Well, you mentioned the goal of $25, and if you're a digital person, there's a lot, you know, there's lower goals than the $25. I think, what is it, 15?
15 gets you the book, 20 gets you pretty much everything we've done, about 300 pages of digital.
Right, and that's a great deal if you're a digital person. We're finding more and more of our readers go the digital route. But physical, at $25, you get the book, or you get that shirt. Now, I'll tell you, I like that shirt, and it's not just because I know Yolanda very well.
that shirt sold like crazy this weekend. I sold a ton of them in Chicago. It's she was really fun to collaborate with, and I was extremely happy with how it came out. But the shirt can also be added for at any tier for $20.
Right, I saw that in there. So some of the other bigger ones, of course, you're the main artist, Mike Molopola. You can get a sketch from him. You can get drawn into the book, and I think there's only one of those left.
I think I have a couple of the extra. Where you can just be drawn into a scene, but all the bigger ones are gone. The people who are drawn in as a wrestler, I sold right. last speaking role one today.
Oh, you did? Because as of this morning, that one was available.
Yeah, no, that went today. So, yeah, all the bigger tiers are gone. I feel stupid that I came up with all these character designs. I feel like I could have crowdfunded my whole Fed.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, once you reach your goal and then you start hitting stretch goals, you know, obviously, if there's room for it, I'm sure they went that quick. I'm sure you might be able to squeeze somebody in as somebody's manager, maybe.
Perhaps. I mean, I don't want to get crazy either. I think I'd like to, I mean, as far as like the stretch goals and stuff like that, I mean, I don't want to go crazy with it because I feel like that's where people go off the deep end. Like if I made the book a hardcover, that could, you know, I'd consider that because I think that's a nice thing, but that also changes the weight of your shipping and you have to factor that in. And then you're multiplying that by, you know, by however many books you sell. And it's a complicated thing. I mean, honestly, like any extra dollars they're going back into the book. It might not be this book. I mean, I think $25 for a 150-page book with, you know, the first appearance, you know, the first published art and published stories from, a, you know, 7 televised wrestlers. I think that's a pretty fair price. You can get them autographed or whatever. I mean, if I finish this book, I mean, I'd like to put the money into the next one, to be honest with you. And then it'll be that much easier for me to put the next book out.
Right. So we've talked about the project. We've talked about the book. Tell everyone listening where they can find the Kickstarter, where they can find you on Twitter, where they can find you on the internet. Give them the whole litany of everything.
It's pretty simple. On Kickstarter, we're Headlock the Last Territory is the name of our project. Our social media is all Headlocked Comic, one word. It's our Facebook, it's our Twitter, our Instagram. It's my Xbox gamer tag, if you care to play. I try to be as open and accessible to anybody that's got questions or wants to know things. I think if you spend some time talking to anybody associated with the book, I think you see that, you know, everybody really believes in the project and passionate about it. And, you know, we're not trying to sell anybody action figures or get over a personal agenda or anything. We're just trying to tell a cool story and sort of highlight the craft of the business that, you know, I think we all, you know, love. So
just one last thing before we allow Todd to ask, you know, he's the wrestling guy on the show, and anyone who listens to the show knows. So you were in Chicago this past weekend. I saw that on your updates on the Kickstarter that you were looking to get a chance to go over to Tara's restaurant.
Yes.
Did you get a chance to?
I did. They actually hosted a Headlock night on Friday night, and it was cool. I got to talk to a lot of people about the book and whatever, but the food was actually phenomenal. I had a Twinkie milkshake for dessert that was was really, really amazing.
Right. I was actually out there this past May, and then – you know, with, you know, Chikara unfortunately no longer around, but a lot of the wrestlers that were on that event have gone through that area a couple times over the last couple months, and every time they go through, she is very accommodating, welcomes them all in. She's, you know, she knows everyone. She keeps track of, like, hey, I see this indies in town. She reaches out to those guys and says, hey, anybody wants to stop by, feel free to do so. And the food is great. The food is great, and it's a really, you know, it's a really wrestling-friendly atmosphere there, which is awesome.
Yeah, and I met her last year in Chicago at C2E2. It was this weird sort of thing where Jerry was supposed to be with me, and he got pulled for Raw in England. And it was a last-minute thing, and she lived there, and Shane Helms had put me in touch with her. And you never know how people are going to be that you haven't met, and I was all worried about it. I mean, this sounds horrible, but I mean, especially girls and fitness models and whatever, you kind of have preconceived notions. And she was just the sweetest person. And she's always been so nice to me and so friendly. And I don't know, she's really a great person. And I'm very happy that everything's going well for her.
So, again, if you just go to Kickstarter and you just type in Headlocked, it's the first thing that comes up. And Headlocked is not difficult to spell. If I can do it, you can do it. So definitely check it out. There's a month left on the project. He's less than $200 away or $2,000 away from his goal. Let's help him get there and put it in the comments if you heard about it here. I saw some folks mentioned in the comics like, hey, I heard you on this show, and that's why I contributed. Now, with going to the conventions, have you heard from any, you know, wrestling folks or even comic book folks that said, hey, I heard you on a wrestling thing, so I contributed. I heard you on a comic book podcast or interview and I contributed. Like, any big name people?
I've had a lot of people say they heard about it from Colt's podcast. I had somebody say they got off between the ropes. I feel like everything I do, I get like one or two people to email me or talk about it. I mean, I had a girl buy a book who has like 100 followers on YouTube, and she made a video blog about it, and I got pledges off of that. I mean, I think, like I said, I think if you like wrestling, I think it's I think I don't know. To me, it's a no-brainer, but that's, you know, that's my mentality, I guess. I wrote the book that I would want to read, I guess. So, you know, but I think every little bit helps.
Yeah, so, you know, if it goes beyond that goal, I will definitely be contributing at the $25 level. You know, I'm getting paid here shortly from the super secret science job. But this is an awesome book. I know you've had tables before at Chikara events in the past.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's when I picked up the original run of this. And, you know, hey, at $25, the physical book, you know, if I'm feeling froggy and I want to get a shirt, I most certainly will. But you also get the digital stuff as well, according to what you have in here.
Yep.
You're going to get the digital copies of stuff when you get that physical book. And, hey, go crazy. And if you're a wrestling fan, if you're a comic book fan, definitely check this out.
And for people who buy the physical book, I will send you, as the chapters are completed, I will send you digital versions of the chapters, you know, so you won't have to wait so long. You can get the digital chapters as they're completed, and then when the physical book is completed, it will come to your house.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
And one more thing, actually, I need to mention. All of the wrestler content is Kickstarter exclusive. It's only for the Kickstarter backers. The Jerry Lawler cover and the stories by Rob and Shane and Daniels and the art by Ken and Beth and Sin is all only for Kickstarter backers. Like, at some point, I'll probably reprint the stories to sell at conventions and stuff, and it'll be the Headlock stuff and the Jill Thompson art, and probably it'll have a different cover, though. So, like, that's my sort of reward to people who are donating when we need it the most, because this is seriously probably the most important thing we're ever going to do for this book. You know, the number that we generate is going to hopefully open, you know, not just fund the book, but open some doors for us to make it easier when we do more books.
Right. You're going to get on, you know, obviously the book has been around for a little while, but this is your chance to be part of the continuation, not just this one story, but to make this story be bigger and go on for as long as Mike's willing to write it.
Absolutely.
So before we close out the interview, Todd, I know you had some questions that you had for Mike. We talked about his comic book background, but I figured I'll let you handle the wrestling stuff.
Sure, because we all know how, you know, I'm the wrestling man on this show.
Right.
You know, I've been watching wrestling for a long time with stuff like one of the big moments in wrestling history, the Alberta Betrayal. You know, that was what Jimmy Hart and Marty Jannetty, I think. Didn't Marty Jannetty put Jimmy Hart in a submission maneuver? And then they just rang the bell. It's one of my favorite moments.
It was a dark day in wrestling history. The flag was certainly at half mast.
Yep. I mean, I Leonard knows how much I love this kind of stuff. I mean, he didn't even like slap yield. They didn't even do that. No, they just rang the bell. McMahon screwed him, you know, and I can't stand that kind of stuff. That's a pipe bomb on this show, by the way. Because I bust Leonard. I got all my wrestling terminology from Wikipedia, the Wikipedia glossary. And to me, pipe bomb is like Smurf. It's universal. So, and I know Leonard gets a big kick out of that.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I most certainly do. And I know Todd will never forgive me. I'd mentioned before, you know, we were at WrestleCon this past April, WrestleMania weekend. And, you know, they have all the guys out that you can meet, you know, at their individual tables. But then some other promotion had a separate room that was like a separate ticket that held a whole bunch of other guys in it. And three of the guys that were in there were the Mean Street Posse, who are Todd's favorite wrestlers of all time.
And what?
And when I told him that, he was like, no price is too big. And then when I saw the price, and I'm like, no, that's too big. I'm sure they're all nice guys, and I would like to meet them. But on top of the ticket that I paid to get in, I wasn't paying an extra fee to meet them.
What? Joey Abs, man. Come on. Here's a blank check. Write in whatever you think is fair. That's always
my posse is not worth a second mortgage.
But they were my mom's favorite. Joey Abs was my mom's favorite wrestler. Of course, I told her that he was her favorite wrestler. So he always holds a place in my heart. And I remember I was actually I came in and out of wrestling, but the Attitude Era actually was when I came back, and I just thought it was ridiculous, and I actually really liked the meet Pete Gass, and it was a blast. Shane.
I think that's it, though. I think, you know, there's something for everybody, and, you know, everybody gets their kicks different ways.
I think he's laughing on the inside, Leonard. He thinks I'm pretty weird with my wrestling knowledge.
Not so much on the inside.
So, Mike, I do thank you for being on the show, our first guest. You know what? I would be remiss, one of our listeners, Nick Alhelm, and I'm butchering his name, which is the what we do on the show. He sent us a question via Twitter stating that indie wrestling and comics don't seem like a natural mix. And he wanted to know what made you go this route for your story. But I think you mostly covered that during the course of the conversation. I just wanted to give Nick the mention.
Yeah, no, I think we covered that.
Yeah, so again, Mike, I do thank you for being on the show one last time. And of course, when this show goes live, there's notes that go along with the show. There's going to be links to you. There's going to be links to the Kickstarter. There's going to be links to the Twitter. But if you're, just going by what we're saying, Headlock Comic is the Twitter. Everything is hubbed around that, whether it be Instagram, whether it be Facebook. And if you just go to Kickstarter and type in Headlock, it's the first thing that comes up. You can't miss it. Look through everything. Watch the videos. You know, look what Mike is putting out there. You know, he's being really reasonable. He's being really honest with a really good product, a comic book about professional wrestling. If you're a fan of either or both, definitely check this book out.
That was a great talk there with Mike Kingston. Definitely check out his Kickstarter project. We mentioned it many, many times. I will include the link in the show notes. You're probably sick and tired of hearing me say that. But if you just go to Kickstarter, search Headlocked, you can check it all out there, all the videos and everything else. And it is probably one of the best Kickstarter projects that you can contribute to. Comic-related, wrestling-related, any-related. Definitely check it out and give Mike's project a look.
Yep, definitely.
So let's get into the books that we read from last week. It's a big show this week. Where would you like to begin?
I'm actually curious. I'm going to go with Green Lantern because I'm hoping that's not the book that you want to cut.
Okay. So Green Lantern, as I look at my notes, written by Robert Venditti with art by Billy Tan. This is the continuation of the new status quo with Hal as the leader of the Green Lantern Corps. And, the new recruits ain't so good. Somebody has gotten out and so on and so forth. What did you think of this issue, Todd?
I liked it. I thought Hal was a little out of character, but I'm also, thinking that since he's now in charge of the Green Lantern Corps, he's not used to it and getting there. I like the Kilowog stuff because Kilowog now is out of his element. He's not the trainer that he once was. I enjoyed it. I'm not going to say it's as great as the Geoff Johns run, but I'm having a good time with it. And I'm very interested in the new core members. I like some of the stuff that Hal was, oh my God, that they weren't getting certain things right. Not like he had the construct wrong for a fist and the way he explained it. I found it all very interesting. I like this book.
I like the little bits, but I don't like the overall story.
Mm-hmm.
And I've given it, three issues now since the new team has come on?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And I'm not too sure I'm keen on the new direction. And then as I look forward, we've got a big crossover coming up in October, which I can get around. I can just get the two main Green Lantern books. And then, of course, Green Lantern is one of the books that has four issues out for Villains Month. So I felt this was a perfect opportunity to walk away from Green Lantern for now.
Mm. Let me ask you a question, because it's an interesting point you brought up to me anyway. You said with the four titles coming up for Villains Month,
yes,
on Green Lantern, if that wasn't there, honestly, do you think you would have gave it a little more? Just because that's so daunting with all the books that are coming out in one giant, I know you've said that you think it's a bit much. Do you think that affected the choice?
I liked the first issue. I don't know how I felt about the second issue. I was already kind of in a make it or break it sort of mode for the third issue.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, I like the little things of him training the guys. I like Kilowog stuff. If Kilowog was the lead in this. But I feel as though with what John's told over the course of the 8 years. And here's what it really is to me. I think Sinestro got a good end to his story.
Mm-hmm.
and it seems like he's coming back already.
Gotcha.
And I'm not really sure if I want to see what's going to happen next. Now, I know he's featured on the covers of Forever Evil, but in what capacity, of course, is going to be another question. That I can maybe give another option to, just because Johns, to me, is at least a tried and true, tested commodity. Venditti, while a good writer, he's really not, he's not making the cylinders click for me. So, you know, we're going to walk away from Green Lantern now. Maybe there'll be a better jumping on point for an old timer like myself somewhere in the near future. But right now, I get enough books that I can pass on Green Lantern for a little while.
Gotcha. I'm with you on the whole Sinestro, Geoff Johns thing. I think Geoff Johns, while writing a great story with Sinestro, did a slight disservice to anybody who has to use him afterwards. But, you know, but it was so great. I get it. And I totally understand what you do. But I don't have the affection for Sinestro the way you do. So I don't mind it. But I could see where you would choose it. But I'm thinking about keeping the book around for a while.
Well, to you, and again, you can, you know, maybe sell me back on it when things start getting good again, maybe.
Gotcha.
So, moving on, let's talk about the books that we both were looking forward to from this past week. What do you want to start with? Did you read Trillium?
No, because that it, there was a, I was thinking about getting it, and since there was a run on it, people ordered the book and then later on called in to get the book. I was like, I'm not going to grab one. Can you get reorders? He's like, yeah. I said, I'll get it down the line. Give it to somebody else who really wants it.
Gotcha.
But I want to read it.
Yes. So being that you didn't read it, I won't say too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, you know what everybody else knows. This is what was announced when this book was first talked about back in New York, maybe?
Yeah.
When he had first announced it a year ago. It's an 8-issue miniseries written and drawn by Jeff Lemire from Vertigo. It got a good push. There's two congruent stories going on, one that happens in the 20s and one that happens in the far-flung year of 3797. It all centers around an Aztec temple, and apparently it's a love story. So, other than that, that's really all I'm going to say about this. I am going to say that it was really good. It was the first thing that I read. I was most looking forward to it, and I was not disappointed at all. I did read the future story first.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you do get a chance to read this, Todd, I'm going to ask you to read the not future story first.
You know what? I was actually going to say that. I said when I get it, which will hopefully he'll have more in. I don't think he'll have more in today, but next week. So if you hold it off, I'll read the 1920s. I believe you said the year was story, and then I'd actually really like to discuss and see, like, if there was any difference in the experience.
Yes, and I also would like to know if any of our listeners got this, digitally. Because I'm really interested to see how this reads digitally.
Okay, like, I'm actually curious to see if they give you one first. You know what I mean? Like, you have to, like, you're going to read the 1920 story or the future one, and then how they trade it. You know, like, is it
right,
interesting?
That's another thing. How is this going to be traded is a huge question I have.
I think it would actually, well, it all depends, because each issue, I don't know, I have to read it. I'm only guessing, you know, each issue's told, it's like a flip book, right?
Yes.
Okay. The way you said it. Because I know when I did see it at the store, you read it one way, maybe another. I don't know. I'm confused. But I'll definitely have to pick it up and we'll talk about it.
Now, I will say the preview pages on Comixology do start with the future story.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that is the official start.
Okay.
I guess.
There's no
but
definite.
There is a part, of course, where, you know, things happen that I wonder how it, like once you read the first 14 pages of the future story, does it just start over at the past story, I guess?
Okay. I'm a little confused, but yeah, I know. I guess yeah. I get what you're saying.
So I'll say this.
You know what?
No, go ahead.
I'm buying it, so it's not like we're not going to sell another one.
No. But I'm telling our listeners, do not let our wishy-washiness and crypticness dissuade you from picking up this book. If your local shop has this in stock, check it out. If you're a digital person, buy it and tell us how it reads.
Well, here's what I was going to say. I'm going to buy one when Dave gets one in. So okay. It's regardless. It's not like if you do this, I'm not going to buy the book. Do you think you can bring it today?
I cannot because I already did the comic swap to my brother.
But you know what I was saying? That way I could have it definitely for next week, and then you know I would read it that way. And then when another one came in, I would buy it for my collection. So I wasn't trying to get Lemire one issue less.
Right. Okay. I completely understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if I had it, I would have brought it. I'm looking at my stack here. I had a busy weekend myself, just like you did. And I was able to read that very quickly and get that to my brother. So, unfortunately, I do not have it.
Okay. No problem. Sorry. That's cool.
But yeah, so Trillium, check it out. Definitely worth your while. $2.99, Vertigo, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So what would you...
your book that you were most looking forward to from last week was Swamp Thing 23.
Yes.
Written by Charles Soule with art by Kano and the continuation, I guess, of the Constantine little two-issue thing and continuation of the Cedar.
Right, The Whiskey Tree, part two.
Yes.
I love this book. I mean, I know we joked last week how big of a Soul fan I am, but this is what I like. This, I thought it was creepy. There was scenes with a Swamp Thing locked in the cell and his powers weren't quite working right. I thought mm-hmm. was awesome. And then, all I have to say is John with his crown was freaking me out as I was reading it more and more, what it was doing, the broken jug or whatever it was from last issue. Swamp Thing, there was a cool Swamp Thing when he kind of embodies the land of the area, and I like the way the artist interpreted it. And, and then we get to the end, and there's more with Cedar and that character that popped up, three issues ago or two issues ago, I'm not quite sure.
Yes.
I really think Soul has a grasp on monthly comic telling, which is a lost art with a lot of people. He tells you your story, and the way I gather a comic is you tell the story, you maybe wrap it up, but if you do, you here's the punch to make you want to pick up next issue. And I think a lot of art writers don't get that. Soul has that down with this. I'm like, oh cool, like this story's over, but here's a taste, the epilogue, whatever, to move me on, and I want next issue Swamp Thing now.
I would be hard-pressed to disagree with everything that you've said. It is a really good book. So many of the things were so awesome and creepy. It felt like a Vertigo book without being a Vertigo book.
Mm-hmm.
Like the creepy things. You don't really see that in a American superhero comic.
Right.
And I thought that was really awesome. My only concern with this book, and it's not like a negative concern in any way, shape, or form, but it's more so a break in storytelling, because next month is a Villains Month book. It's good that it gets a Villains Month book, unlike a lot of other books that are not getting them, Animal Man being one. But the fact that it's getting a Villains Month book, it's going to break up this story. And I'm glad that it's kind of like the end of a little two-issue thing, where the Cedar stuff can kind of start fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't think that the Villains book, which is going to be about Arcane, is going to tie into the Cedar stuff. So if you're picking up it because you're just getting all the 3D covers, and you pick this up, while it's probably going to be a great issue, I don't know if it's going to be enough to tie you into the Cedar story. I hope that it is. I have faith in Charles Soule to do so.
You know what? I actually didn't even think about that. It reminds me back when DC had all their zero issues.
Mm-hmm.
Very few storylines were lucky enough. Like, I'll just throw All-Star Western was after the, it was right after the Black Diamond saga. So, it was, or just before it started. So they were like, oh, we'll go into the saloon and we'll talk about it. And then we had the origin issues. Other ones like Swamp Thing, to me, it really hurt because they were like, here's the first issue of the Rot storyline we've been waiting for. All right. You read it and then it's like, next issue, we go into the past and the Rot storyline's the issue after it. And I think it, you know, unless you're lucky, like I said, it really derails your story. And I hope, you know, like you said, that he can bridge this well.
Yes.
Especially because he'll pick up readers with Villains Month, like you said, and can bring them in to the fold to tell the story.
And as I notice here with the preview link for the first couple pages there of Swamp Thing, it does have some of that stuff of Swamp Thing in the jail cell.
Mm-hmm.
But the solicit text that goes along with it is for Justice League Dark.
So that works well.
I don't think that's on DC. I think that's where I get the previews from.
Gotcha.
So let us talk about this. Probably, I'm going to guess another book that you don't get. In Superior Foes of Spider-Man number 2?
No, I only read the Superior Spider-Man itself.
Yes. So this is essentially the Sinister Six, and it's a Sinister Six of a bunch of, low-rent guys, which is usually how the Sinister Six would usually appear in Spider-Man comics. Every once in a while, it would be led by Doc Ock. Very rarely. Would it be? In the entire history of Spider-Man, I think it was a Doc Ock-led Sinister Six 5 times. All the other times, it was like some sort of other group of low-rent dudes, and this one is about as low-rent as it gets. It's Boomerang, it's the new female Beetle, the Shocker, Speed Demon, and this new one of the new villains that Dan Slott had created for the new Brand New Day stuff, whose name escapes me right now, but he's one of these, Overdrive of his name. He's like a chop shop, Fast and Furious sort of guy.
Ooh.
And then a mysterious sixth member of the group who only Boomerang knows who it is. And he keeps kind of stringing the other guys along, and he's playing the other four against the one guy who's the mystery guy. And if you read some of the solicitation stuff and even just some of the preview images, they kind of tease who it is, and it is who you think it is. But it's a really good story, and I could see that this book, in like 3 months, maybe, hopefully, getting the same sort of buzz that a book like Hawkeye does.
Okay.
He gives some personality to these villains that really didn't have much of a personality before.
Mm-hmm.
So the only one I don't agree with is Shocker, because I think Shocker has been established before as to not be a sniveling coward, and he is a sniveling coward in this book. Maybe we'll see why he's now a sniveling coward, but I'm really digging this book. I love fun books with low-rent villains, getting some personality, and seeing this different side of things. And actually, I'm afraid for these villains, if and when Superior Spider-Man actually does show up and turn his attention to them, because he will run through these guys like Kleenex.
Yes, didn't he already mess up some of them in this?
He has messed up a lot of them.
Gotcha.
None of the, this group, individually, he's taken them on. But if he sees this group of six, I'm sure they are so below his spider radar, it's not even funny.
And then on top of that, the fact that they're hijacking his group was probably not, the thing he created won't go over too well either.
Right, and in Superior Spider-Man Team-Up, he's actually kind of putting the old group together there. So maybe it's all going to tie in together.
You never know.
You never know. I have faith, though. I really like this book. I'm really loving the Superior Spider books, whether it be the Superior Foes, whether it be the main book, whether it be Team-Up. And I think Team-Up even crosses over with Scarlet Spider this week, and hopefully that gets a little bit of a boost.
And then everything should be superior at Marvel.
Yes. Well, again, I think we talked about it here. It is their number. It is the number one ongoing book for Marvel. The number one selling ongoing book, non-event book, non-number one book that has their big spike for the first issue, and then Peter's right off, or crossover book, or whatever it is. It is their number one ongoing selling book, Superior Spider-Man.
Which is, it's a good book.
It's an awesome book.
So I can understand why.
Yes. We didn't talk about it last week, but Superior Spider-Man number 14 was a first issue of a two-parter there with the Hobgoblin. Really good.
Yes.
Just going to throw that in there. Lots of Superior talk.
Yes. I have a few questions when I see about that, too. So.
All right, and I will answer them.
Gotcha.
So the last book that we're going to talk about is the only reason I didn't put it on my list was because it was just you know, a lot of books that we read, and that was Quantum and Woody number 2 by James Asmus with art by Tom Fowler. Todd, you asked to talk about it this week, so I will let you start things off.
The reason I want to talk about this was because I was iffy on issue 1 going into it, mm-hmm. you know, because it's, you know, Quantum and Woody, and we've talked about old properties that you truly, truly love and coming back and blah, blah, blah. So the issue 1, I was, oh, I don't know. I mean, it was funny and I liked it, and I was like, this, you know, has potential and everything. Then I read this issue and I laughed out loud, and I think this issue feels more like the Quantum and Woody that I love, you know, with the bickering and, you know, obviously there's a different origins for them and everything. The characters are slightly different, but there are a few moments that I think in this one are truly hysterical. Like when, Quantum and Woody are, you know, outside in the cops and they happen to have no clothes on, and some of the things that Woody was saying, and I was like, you know what, this is cool. And when they were putting their costumes together and everything, and the ridiculousness of it as you get to the end with the Asian businessmen, and I'm like, you know what, I think you've really captured the feel, if not like the stories, because it's slightly different. And I really, really liked it, and I'm ready to go for more issues.
I'm with you. I liked the first issue. I liked this second issue just as much. And, yeah, I thought this was a really good issue. As you had mentioned before, it has the feel of the old series, but being different enough that it's its own thing.
Yep.
And, yeah, I like it very much. I will be sticking with this book for some time. I don't think, you know, I know there's a new artist coming on with issue 5. I'm sure we'll be finding out that in a week or two when the November solicitations come out for everyone. But I'm looking to see who takes over the art, because I really like Tom Fowler's art on this book.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy it. I really do. And I think it's just firing on, you know, all cylinders, and it's good to have that. So
yes.
That's why I brought it up.
So, yeah, definitely check this out if your store has them in stock. Hopefully they do, because it is really good. I do also want to say, and again, I think, you know, I don't like to talk negatively about stuff, but I did mention I would say the other book that I dropped, and the other book that I dropped is Satellite Sam by Matt Fraction.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Was the second issue came out then, like you were saying?
Second issue came out last week, and it was more of the same. A lot of talking heads. I'm not too keen on the art. The art is fine. I understand, you know, people liking Howard Chaykin's art, but in this book, it's just not working for me. And I tried a lot of Fraction stuff. Every time he writes something, I always try it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I've ever liked of his was Hawkeye. But it's not going to stop me from trying his other stuff as well.
Gotcha. I dropped out after the first issue. I couldn't take it, but you know, I'm a Howard Chaykin fan, so that was one of the things that definitely brought me on, but it couldn't keep me around.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, those are the two books that I'm no longer getting. We'll see, as some of the November solicitations have come out, I've more and more seen my list just grow and grow.
I'm actually going to have to talk to you how to do a list in triplicates and stuff, because I found out that my wallet is groaning every time I go into the comic shop. So I have to cut back on stuff, but I don't know what to cut back on, because I don't know what I get anymore.
Uh-huh.
I know what I get, like certain books, but I'm like, I have to sit down, make a list of everything that I get, that I get monthly, and go, all right, these are the cuts that I have. These aren't as good as this, this, and this, and I have to get it back to a manageable number, because the low side on a week for me is starting to hit 12 and 13 books, so that's getting a little crazy.
See, again, my list, you know, if I was to show you my list, and I'll send you the, you know, I'll send you the link to it, or I'll bring it to the shop today, mm-hmm. but if you were to look at my list, it looks huge. But you have to remember, there's books in here that are mini on the list. It's books that are miniseries that are ending, books that are coming in November.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks huge because it's everything that's coming out over the next 4 months.
You pad your stats on the list. No, I know what you mean. It's right. It's one of those because you can't really, you know, count a book. All right, you might have overlap on a mini that's ending and one that's starting, or a one shot here that you want to try, or you know, or oh, there's a new series. You're like, yeah, I have to give so and so a try. Yeah, but like, I just know that there's a lot of books that I'm like, oh, I have to. There's got to be something in there that I can read, and I just keep adding more and more and more because there's a lot of good stuff out there.
I could help you.
Gotcha.
I said this to my wife the other day. If everyone just did what I did and listened to me, their life would be so much easier.
Gotcha.
And I'm not saying that is because everyone should be like me, but I think I figured it out.
Okay.
Not everything, but a couple things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those are the things that, make sense.
Mm-hmm. If you can make this work for me, I'll buy you one of those pizzas with the onions. My
All
treat.
Right. my new jam these days is an omelet with bacon, onion, and spinach.
Ooh.
Delightful. And it's almost as much spinach as it is egg, and it's quite a treat.
Ooh. I'll have to see if I can whip one of those up in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're off on a tangent, so let's get into the book that we're most looking forward to coming out this week.
Yes.
I'll let you kick it off.
The book I'm looking forward to most this week is, and there is a lot of good stuff. I mean,
yes.
It is ridiculous the sheer amount of books that I can choose from. And I think if I throw a dart, we might cross over because I'm looking at like, you know, I have East of West coming out, Astro City's coming out, Saga's coming back, which is a big one for me. But in the end, I'm going to go with Thor, God of Thunder 11, because I believe it is the conclusion of the God Bomb. So I'm going to go with that one.
That is a close one for me. And I'm just the opposite of you for that. The reason I did not choose that as the one I'm most looking forward to this week is because it's the end of a storyline.
Mm-hmm.
While that's great for me and you, I'm happy to see the storyline end to see what's going to happen next. It may not be the best, most recommendable spot for someone else to come on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the book that I'm most looking forward to falls under the, I guess, the heading of absence makes the heart grow fonder. As it has been 4 months since there has been an issue of Saga. And issue 13 comes out this week. And I know that Brian K. Vaughan has been very busy. Completely understandable and completely deserved so. But, yes, issue 13 comes out this week. I'm not sure if it's a good jumping on point. I think maybe the one... Actually, you know what? It is, because they did the two six-issue things. The last issue ended on a cliffhanger, and now here we are. And it looks to be back on the monthly schedule, at the very least. And yes, tangentially, this issue of Thor is the end of this arc.
Okay.
And we're going to dive right into kind of movie analogs after this.
Okay.
So yeah, Thor number 11 is Todd's choice, whereas Saga number 13 is my choice. Both great choices, and I'm sure everything that all of our listeners are getting are awesome as well.
See, we cover both the beginning and the end.
That's correct.
That's what we do here. We cover all the bases.
Yes, indeed. And hey, if you are checking out one of these books, if you're checking out Mike's Kickstarter project, or if you just want to say hi and take a picture of you with your arm around your bacon, onion, and spinach omelet, you can send it to the show at Weekly Long Box on Twitter. You could send it to Todd on Twitter at Roker the Joker. That's R-O-W-K-E-R, the Joker. Or you could send it to me. I always like pictures of food. And that is L.F. Chikarason, that's L-F-C-H-I-K-A-R-A-S-O-N on Twitter, or if you want to use that same heading and throw an at Y-mail at the end, you're going to be a part of this fun time that we have without having to get a Twitter account.
Yay.
Yay, indeed. So also leave a review for us on iTunes if you're getting the show that fashion. Now, the other day I was on there and I noticed that our iTunes feed looked a little odd. So if you're experiencing problems with the iTunes, I am going to mention it to our tech folk just to see if there has been any issues. It looked like there were no episodes available, and our little fancy icon had disappeared as well.
Oh, no.
But again, Todd and I do a really good job, and so does the, you know, the whole Grizzly Network doing a good job of tweeting those links out, and I'm an RSS feed man myself.
And I understand all that because I'm a real technophile.
So, getting into our Twitter question from last week, which is the main reason that we get in touch with you on a weekly basis, but shouldn't be the only reason, feel free to contact us for any reason that you would like, whether you get a response back is another story. Our question from last week is your favorite comic to live action TV adaptation. And we did get a lot of interesting choices from some of our listeners. Quinn the Eskimo Quinn on Twitter, mentioned the old 70s TV show of Spider-Man. And I don't think I've seen a full episode of that. You know, you just see those clips and you know, there's a line for, I don't know, shoddy production, and I'll watch the junkiest thing in the world. But I don't know, there's something about that looks to me about as low rent as it gets.
I loved watching those on the old Dialing for Dollars Gerbil Race show.
What?
Don't you remember the Dialing for Dollars Gerbil Races on WNEP?
No, that was before my time, a good man.
Oh, I'll have to explain
that. 4-year difference makes all the difference.
Oh, I'll have to explain the gerbil races to you sometime.
While we're talking over Superior Spider-Man at the shop, your pull list will also talk about the gerbil races. I'm making notes.
Gotcha. Dialing for Dollars, it was awesome.
Ryan Fisher, longtime listener, good friend of mine, RPF5029 on Twitter, mentioned the New Adventures of Lois and Clark. And being a comic book fan and a Superman fan, I could say I never saw a single episode of that show.
Watch the whole thing. It was I'm a huge Terry Hatcher fan.
Because
yes. Her acting is amazing.
You're a big Desperate Housewives fan?
I've watched an episode or two.
I think the only thing that I ever watched with Terry Hatcher in it was that that movie with Andrew Dice Clay as well.
Oh, Brain Smasher Love Story?
I didn't want to have to say the name of the movie as though I have it in heavy rotation at the house. But yes, Brain Smasher Love Story.
Mm-hmm. I liked her when she was a mermaid on the last couple episodes of The Love Boat. She was a mermaid dancer for the. They were trying to, you know, risque the show up by having sexy dancers and a musical number every week. And that's where she first appeared. Oh, I know Terry Hatcher's whole IMDb list. Don't worry about it.
That'll be a separate podcast, yes. I think.
But anyway, go ahead.
Alan Middleton, Professor Alan on Twitter, mentioned a TV show from the 80s called Sable. Based on the Mike Grell comic book. I never even heard of this thing.
I've never seen that one. I knew of it, but never saw it.
We had a lot of people mention Smallville. We had people mention Walking Dead. We had people mention Arrow. I forsake you, listeners. Not a single one of you chose my pick, which is the old Adam West Batman TV show.
Didn't somebody pick it?
I don't think so.
Okay, I'm going to have to look over that.
I don't know. You know? If they did, I might have overlooked it, which does happen from time to time, because I am careless.
No, not you. You're care more. That's what I call you.
Oh, boy.
But, so Batman 66 is yours?
Yes, Batman 66 is mine. So our listeners had a tie. It was split right down the middle from the most votes. Do you want to take a guess what they would be? Guess one.
I would have to say the old Incredible Hulk TV show.
Okay, that was definitely one.
Okay, because that's a standby. Lou Ferrigno still draws at Comic-Con, I'll tell you. So if I had to guess the other one, Flash?
No love for Flash.
Oh, okay.
The other one that came up. With a ton of votes, was the Tick live-action show with Patrick Warburton.
Yes, I remember that. I remember that show. That wasn't long-lived, though, if I remember.
No, and it's on pretty much every streaming service that exists.
As it should be.
Yes.
So that's pretty cool.
No, we actually had someone mention, when you said about Batman, longtime listener Wobbly Neil on Twitter. He was torn between Tales from the Crypt, which is a great choice, the Batman, and he said, but logic dictates I must choose Walking Dead.
You know what's funny then? Wobbly Neil whiffed on both of ours.
Mm. Oh, yeah. What was yours?
Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, Tales from the Crypt is so good. I think about so many episodes like as though they're happening in my mind as we speak. Like, they're that fresh in my mind.
Honestly, you know, and a lot of them were pulled from the comics. Now, I never read the, you know, the old EC horrors and stuff like that, but I've talked with Dave, and there's a ton of, you know, ones that are classic from there that he told me. He's like, yeah, they were here. This was that issue. That was, you know, whether or not it was the Tales from the Crypt comic or they might have stole them from the other horror titles, you know what I mean, and just put them under the Tales from the Crypt. But I love that show, and that was one of them that I didn't have HBO, so I had to go to a friend's house to watch them.
Oh.
Or he would tape them for me. And, you know, FYI, Terry Hatcher did an episode of Tales from the Crypt.
Wasn't she the Christmas one?
I don't know if she was the Christmas one. She was the one with the guy who was the weather wizard in the Justice League TV promo. He was in RoboCop, and I'm trying to
think. Yes, I know exactly who you mean.
It was him, and he was, I guess, like one of those guys with the jingling jewelry. He's like, you know, with the button-down shirt, who, if he couldn't have her, no one could. So that was the episode. I really know way too much about Terry Hatcher's acting history.
That's another again, we're gonna have a long conversation in the shop today.
Yes, we are, about boundaries, right?
Yes. So thank you everyone who contributed to the question from this past week, and the question for this week is, and going through the list of things, and we had to double check this here because I was scratching my head. And, you know, we were kind of cast a wide net sometimes on some of our questions, and we're going to narrow it down. Mm-hmm. And it's what inspired this for me was the line in the Brian Michael Bendis story that we talked about before with him and Kevin Maguire, where he says, quote, "I think artists like Kevin are a national treasure and should be treated as such by publishers and readers alike." So to you, our listeners, and Todd as well, who is the artist that you think is a national treasure?
Hmm.
Who is your favorite artist?
Okay.
We've had favorite creator. We've had creator that you just don't get. And I think we've had favorite. I don't think we've had favorite writer to narrow it down. But this time around, we're doing favorite artist.
Okay. I have to think.
And
I'll
even say
one.
The artist who you think is a national treasure.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Tough one.
See, because for me, I can say my favorite artist, but it's not the one who's a national treasure, so I got to do some thinking.
Right. Definitely, because I was thinking the same thing. Mm-hmm. I know who my favorite artist is, but I don't know. I don't know if he falls into the national treasure artist.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting.
Should be a national treasure.
Should be a national treasure.
Yes.
So not one that's already considered a national treasure. I'm making it harder than it has to be.
You certainly are.
Gotcha.
So, again, just tweet us your response. Throw the hashtag GrizzWLQ on there, and I'll compile them all up, and we will talk about them next week. I do want to thank Mike Kingston for being a guest on the show. Let us know what you thought of Mike. Let us know what you thought about the format change this week. If we get a positive response, maybe we'll try to get some more guests on here in the future. And we slowly creep ever more closely to episode 100.
Some interesting things going on for shaping up for episode 100.
Yes. We've got a very unique circumstance coming up there. Maybe we might turn it into an interview show if our fans want to hear more from some creators that we can get a hold of on the show. But for episode 91 of the Weekly Long Box, this is Leonard for Todd, and we will catch you all here next week.